I'm Dan Cassidy, and this is UBS On Air's Investment Strategy Podcast Series. We discuss the topic of death, taxes, and upstream gifting. Joining us for today's conversation, pleased to welcome back Ainsley Carbone, Total Wealth Strategist, and Justin Waring, Investment Strategist, both from the Chief Investment Office. So Ainsley and Justin, welcome back. And Ainsley, I know you will be leading today's conversation. I will go ahead and pass it over to you.
So today, Justin and I will be discussing his recent blog, Death, Taxes, and Upstream Gifting. It basically tackles how you might use the step-up in cost basis to mitigate capital gains. So one of the strategies you discussed was upstream gifting. Can you start us off by kind of giving us a background? Because I know it's pretty unfamiliar to a lot of people. I know before we started discussing this, I wasn't too familiar with it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously giving away shares that have appreciated since you bought them is a good way of reducing your own capital gains exposure. But at the same time, you're usually giving someone else the obligation to pay capital gains. And so this is sort of a bit of trepidation because family dynamics being what they are, if you give someone a gift that comes with that caveat of, you know, here's something free, but also it comes with a cost of its own. It's probably why it's not as popular as it probably should be. But when you gift to generations that are closer to death, there is a provision of the tax code that allows there to be a step up in cost basis. And so, basically when you die, your estate goes through the estate tax process. So, there's a check to see whether it's over a lifetime exemption. And if anything that is over that lifetime exemption, which is right now like $11.4 million, is subject to a tax that's essentially like an ordinary income tax. But after passing through that, then the cost basis is reset to the price of the security on the date of death. It's actually the average of the high and the low on the date of death, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And so that means that if your grandmother is going to leave you some assets when she passes away, this is a way for you to increase the amount that you get on an after-tax basis in that event, assuming that her estate is not going to be hit by the estate tax. And so sort of you give shares to your grandmother, and then when it comes back to you in inheritance, it's not taxed and the cost basis is reset.
So given the adjustments that were made with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, did that kind of is that what made this become a little more common?
So very few families are actually subject to the estate tax, and the number was a little bit more before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which essentially doubled the lifetime exemption. So through 2025, it's 11.4, but then after that, it goes back to about 5.6 plus whatever inflation is. And so it's, you know, there is a window for some families that otherwise would not be able to do it. If there is a family member that's going to pass away in the next, you know, few years, then this is a window, of course, assuming Congress doesn't change the law. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, very few families are actually affected by this. And there are other provisions to make sure that you keep the estate below this limit. And so, you know, I think it is interesting that it's become more popular recently, and definitely something that's been talked about a little bit more popular, more frequently. But it's not a new thing, and it's probably not going away entirely. The question is, you know, what is the estate tax limit going to be in the future, and making sure that essentially in trying to avoid a 23.8% tax, you need to make sure that there's you're managing the probability or the risk that you end up paying a 40% tax, which is essentially what would happen if it does get subject to the estate tax. The other aspect of this, which we talk about in the blog, it's a bit technical, but if you sell securities, you're paying capital gains on the gain. Mm-hmm. If it's the estate tax, it's applied on the entire value of the security, including the cost basis. And so it's a 40% tax versus a 23.8% tax, but it's also applied to a larger percentage of the asset as well. So the damage is a little bit worse than it sounds. So you just want to make sure you're, if you're trying to employ this, make sure that you give yourself plenty of wiggle room to avoid that, and that you have a plan B if Congress chooses to change the law.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes this so difficult when it comes to making decisions, is that we have no idea what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
So there's this whole, you don't want to go too far in one direction without being able to take a step back.
Exactly. I think this is one strategy among many that you can use to manage your taxes. And I think the real interesting thing about this is how it fits in with our liquidity, longevity, legacy strategy, which is this is a bit of a difficult subject to bring up. You know, no one likes to talk about death. Talking about money in the family is also difficult. You're combining those two into one strategy. I think a lot of people think it's cool and it can save you money and no one likes to pay taxes, but there's also a trepidation in the back of your mind about even broaching this subject with your family members. But I do think that this is one of the strengths of the liquidity, longevity, legacy strategy, is that it helps us talk about the legacy assets in a way that's a lot more constructive. You know, my legacy is going to be my nieces and nephews' longevity, right? Because that's where the money's going when I die. And so if I think about, how am I going to meet their goals with that portion of my legacy assets? It lets me make a lot more rational decisions about how to take risk and how to manage risk, because that time horizon is 50 plus years. It's absolutely no risk mitigation is not an issue at all. And so that's the way that we normally talk about this issue of one person's legacy is another person's longevity, mm-hmm. is sort of just risk tolerance. But it also applies to other aspects. And really, if you think about the family assets as a whole, the upstream gifting is a strategy that allows you to reduce the overall family's tax obligations. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's just one of many examples of how reframing the conversation about wealth management, you know, around the three L's can highlight some opportunities that otherwise you might not even think to broach. So I think this is, you know, one of the strengths of talking about money with your family, is that you can sort of break down these longstanding, superstitions. I'm not sure exactly, preconceptions, mm-hmm. that our society has about talking about money and talking about our mortality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And of course, with a strategy such as the upstream gifting, it does take a level of communication, some sort of communication,
yeah.
because you have to, when, if let's say we were to gift to our parents, mm-hmm. in hopes of them giving it back to us upon their passing, that takes a lot of communication. So I think it also provides this opportunity for people to kind of broach that topic and get into the discussion so that it can open the window for other opportunities.
Right. I think a lot of people, they don't want to tell their kids about the inheritance, right? I've had a lot of clients tell me, I don't want this money to change their life. I want it to enable them. And so I think every family has a different level of openness that is going to be appropriate. Some family members are very, very focused on, I don't want them to have more than X dollars because I feel like that would completely transform their life and then they'd be tempted to just stop working or something like that. Other people are much more open in the conversation and want to tell them ahead of time so that they can feel more confident to try riskier things, you know, start a business or things like that. So it's obviously, it's going to depend on the child. It's going to depend on the family. But this type of two-way communication is a very good way to broach the subject, because you can say, look, I have made a huge amount of money in this security. As a percentage of our family wealth, it's not very much, but as a percentage of my wealth, I now have a concentrated position in this stock. If I gift it to you, or if I gift it to grandma, then that, you know, from a family perspective, means that we all get a little bit wealthier, mm-hmm. In the long run. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I'm not, we're like transitioning the concentration risk to someone else. And so anyway, I think it's interesting. I don't know that everyone should do it, but it definitely opens up an avenue for types of conversations that we can have multi-generationally about money. And I'm always looking for those opportunities because there is such a sort of a bias against talking about money with family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Communication is certainly pretty important when it comes to making sure that your assets are in line with your financial objectives. You have to first, of course, identify those objectives before you set up your plan appropriately.
Exactly. And if you're running part of your legacy to be someone else's longevity, you need to talk to the person and find out what their objectives are. And, you know, I think there's lots of interesting ways to broach that conversation. And we'll definitely write about that more in the future. But for example, if you had $1 million, what would you do? If you bring it up with your kid like that, you don't have to say, I'm planning to give you $1 million. You could just kind of see, like, is that going to give you, would that give you the confidence hypothetically to do something else? And then, you know, I think one of the aspects about giving inheritances is, and in fact, you know, giving philanthropically is that we definitely get more benefit out of it when we do it while we're still around to enjoy the outcome of that. Mm-hmm. Giving at death is convenient for a lot of different reasons. It means that it reduces the likelihood that you've given away too much. But it's also inconvenient because you're not getting any real enjoyment out of the effects that can have. And so it is important to have these conversations and think about, you know, is every dollar in your portfolio doing the best it can for your real objectives, which are not just financial, but also social and familial. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it's an interesting strategy and definitely something that you can bring up in conversation with clients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, anything you want to add before we finish up?
No, I just think, you know, I'm really proud of the tagline of this one, which is that death can solve taxes.
Well, thank you so much, Justin.
Well, Ainsley and Justin do appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us. And I will highlight for our listeners, there is a blog up now on UBS Online Services, title of which, Death, Taxes, and Upstream Gifting. If you are a client of UBS, be sure to contact your financial advisor. They can provide you a copy of this blog directly, or again, you may locate it up on UBS Online Services. From the UBS On Air studio in New York City, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.